Hey, this is the King of Bros, and you're listening to Saw Monsters Sound Off.
It's business time, baby.
You are listening to Solo Monster Sounds Off.
It's such good shit.
Mama Monster.
Conquered! I'm home!
You're like fighting a woman?
You're saying Vince McMahon is stupid. Is that what you're saying?
Oh my God, we're only an hour in. We have two more hours of this.
SmackDown sucks. It's almost as bad as Raw.
Who writes this stuff? Bruce?
Come over here and threaten me!
I'm the Solo Monster, damn it.
Solo Monster? Who are you to doubt El Dandy?
Welcome to episode 730 of the Solo Monster Sounds Off for Sunday, November 14th, 2021. I am the Solo Monster, a very tired, very bleary-eyed Solo Monster. Late night last night after the AEW Full Gear pay-per-view. An excellent show, which I will talk about here in a little bit, but did not get to bed until after 4 a.m. So yes, I'm a little tired right now, but we shall soldier on. I want to say thank you to everybody who has supported the show throughout the week, all of our PayPal supporters. You guys are amazing, and if you want to support the podcast, you may do so, if you wish, on thesolomonster.com. You'll see the PayPal button on the right-hand side of the page. $10 or more will get you a nickname and a shout-out. The Portland pop star, Paul Hamilton. Paul, I hope you are doing well, my friend. Night Stalker, Naif Al-Safar, who I know popped in on the stream last night. John Loose Cannon Lopez, Big Bear Brian Becerra, Killshot Keith Hart, Beast Mode Brock Joseph, Velvet Revolver Robert Murray, The Chicago Slayer Willie Eichard, Ryan the Dagger McTaggart, The Diamond Dallas Dance Machine, Harrison Soep, John Raging Mad Riffle, Ostentatious, Alan Carter, New York Punk, Arnold Modesto, Caleb Showtime Lindley, and Sherrod Big Daddy Boyd. I also want to give a shout out to Greedy Carlton Greer, who's being anything but greedy this month. This Friday, November 19th, he and some friends are going to be hosting a charity stream on Twitch for Food Lifeline to help end hunger in Western Washington. They're going to have a tournament bracket playing Super Smash Bros. Ultimate with all items, moving stages, and hazards for the ultimate chaos. Then, a few days later, on November 22nd, he's going to be doing a birthday stream. His birthday is actually a few days later. So if anybody wants to stop by and say hello, even if just for a few minutes, the place to go for both streams, all of this, is Snorehawk64 on Twitch. That's twitch.tv/Snorehawk64. I'm going to be doing a 14-year anniversary live stream this Thursday, November 18th. And we're probably going to incorporate some Survivor Series predictions in there, plus your questions. I might dig up some email questions. Of course, I'll be taking Super Chat questions. If you want to come hang out, I'm looking at Thursday night, 8 p.m. Eastern. If that changes, I can let you guys know on Twitter. But that is the plan right now. We did an anniversary stream last November, and it was a lot of fun, and it went over really well. So we'll do the same thing this Thursday, which means there's a lot of streaming coming up, because we have Dynamite on Wednesday night, the anniversary stream on Thursday, Rampage on Friday. I'll get a little bit of a respite, but not much of one on Saturday. Next Sunday, of course, is episode 731, and that is Survivor Series Sunday. So we have another pay-per-view coming up next Sunday. So a lot of content coming up. I want to thank you for all the nice messages about the House of Glory show on Friday night, Born Again, which streamed live on Fight TV. I take it some people had audio issues during the show, but not everybody. Got some scattershot messages about that. That would have been an issue on Fight's end. Hopefully they get that resolved before our next show, which is For the Glory on December 11th. That's going to be a Saturday night this time, not a Friday. It was great to be back on commentary with JD from NY. We've been dying to get back on the call now for 2 years. Hard to believe it's been 2 years. When you're in the middle of it, and all the pandemic crap, it's almost like time is moving so slow. But now you look back on it, you go, where did the 2 years go? It's hard to believe it's been that long. But I got to meet some of you at the venue, some old faces and some new ones as well. Great action, up and down the card. Rocky Romero, 48 hours removed from his battle with Bryan Danielson on Dynamite. coming on in, losing to Cashflow Ken Broadway, who is a staple of House of Glory. Violet, the first ever House of Glory women's champion, picking up a win over Ivelisse. Low-Ki is the new House of Glory crown jewel champion, with a win over TJP and Charles Mason. And that main event, Will Ospreay, the real IWGP heavyweight champion, as he calls himself, beating the Amazing Red in a rematch from their Super J Cup match 2 years ago. It was an honor to be able to call that match. Hopefully we did it justice. But as cool as that was, the announcement at the end of the show, Ospreay telling Red, I'm done with you. I've got a different challenge lined up for you next month. And that challenge is Malakai Black. House of Glory becomes the House of Black on December 11th. Getting to call a red against black match, a match between two of my favorite colors, that is going to be insane. So I cannot wait for that. I believe the show will be streaming live on Fight Again. If you can make it out to the NYC Arena, you'll want to get those tickets fast, because it was packed the other night with standing room only. And I would imagine after that Malakai Black announcement, tickets are going pretty fast for the next show as well. So thank you for all of the support. Last night was AEW Full Gear. They were live in Minneapolis for the second straight night. They had Rampage there at the Target Center on Friday. Big pay-per-view last night, which was originally supposed to happen last weekend, but they pushed it back. An excellent show. I would say as good or maybe even a little bit better than this year's All Out. I'm kind of on the fence about that. I think I may have liked All Out a little bit more. The point is, it has been a banner year for AEW's big shows and their pay-per-views, even with that wet fart of a finish in the main event at Revolution with Moxley and Omega. They have had a hell of a year when it comes to their pay-per-view shows. The big story coming out of the show, Hangman Adam Page is the new AEW World Champion, ending the almost one-year, title reign of Kenny Omega. This was the culmination of a two-year story arc that dates back all the way to when Hangman lost to Chris Jericho in 2019. Jericho became the first ever AEW World Champion. Hangman not ready for that spot. Now I think he's more than ready, and he's a lot more over than he was 2 years ago. But he is the new champion. There was drama with the Young Bucks coming out and kind of staring down Hangman, but not doing anything to help Omega. You know, I don't know where this is going, and that's part of what I like about it. There's so many different ways they could go with this elite stuff. You know, is somebody going to turn? Is somebody going to get booted out of the group? Are they waiting to bring new people into the group who might soon become available? There's a lot of questions surrounding where this story is going to go. Now, I think the Bucks, even though they didn't do anything to screw over Hangman last night, I think that they make more natural heels than they do baby faces. So I would hope that they stay heel. And it could be Kenny Omega as the one going babyface. Maybe he gets kicked out of the Elite. You know, with this forbidden door being open, I was thinking maybe they could do a slow burn turn that eventually pays off with Kota Ibushi coming to AEW and coming to Hangman's aid. You can tell that story as well. And a lot of the AEW audience, they know who Ibushi is. It would not be very difficult for them to tell that story. I mean, look at the story they told in relatively short order with CM Punk and Eddie Kingston that goes back to their independent days over 15 years ago. They could tell that story very easily. A lot of the people, I think, are waiting for the bigger New Japan names to show up, like an Okada, like an Ibushi, like a Tanahashi. And there's a history there with Omega and with Ibushi, so they could go down that path as well if they want to. Lots of different ways to go with this story, but Hangman should get some time to defend that championship. Already on the stream last night, I had people booking him to lose soon. And what if it's a short run? I mean, I would think he at least needs one pay-per-view main event as the champion, one pay-per-view win under his cap before we start taking the belt away from him. Maybe a double or nothing in May, I could see taking the title off of him. But Bryan Danielson won the finals of the world title eliminator. He got the win over Miro in a spot that was originally supposed to go to Jon Moxley. So Danielson is now the number one contender, and they have set up a Danielson-Hangman match. I don't know that they can hold off until the end of February. which I believe that is when Revolution should be. So we could be setting up for a big pay-per-view, or not pay-per-view, but a big TV main event sometime in the next several weeks. Or, as I pointed out last night, you know, January 5th is the debut date on TBS for Dynamite. 3 days later is the first quarterly special on TNT. That's probably going to be that Battle of the Belt show. And if that is a live special, because if it's taped, I wouldn't give away a world title match on that show. But you could do Hangman and Danielson perhaps on the January 8th show. Build to a big main event on that first live TNT special. That's what I would do. You know, your first special, you want to come in with a hot main event. That's the match I think to do. Darby Allin, MJF, they tore it up in the opener. That was my favorite match of the night. And CM Punk and Eddie Kingston was right behind him. They had 11 minutes to go out there. They had a dogfight, knockdown, dragout, kind of exactly the kind of match you would expect those two to have when they have a personal issue. You know, they beat the hell out of each other. It was not meant to be a technical masterpiece. Punk bled a gusher during the match, but he did pick up the win. I know some people were upset. They thought the wrong man won. I think the right man won. And I don't think the issue is over between those two. I don't think we've seen the last of Punk and Eddie Kingston one-on-one. I said also that I'm hopeful still we might be able to get Kingston and Jon Moxley when he's ready to come back in a tag team match against Punk and Danielson. I think that's where things were headed if Moxley did not leave when he did. So I'm hopeful we'll still end up getting the match at some point. One note that I noticed before I started recording here, this is a story on PW Insider, is that Eddie Kingston and Malakai Black, who wrestled last night, he tagged with Andrade against Pac and Cody Rhodes, and Pac picked up the win for his team. But Eddie Kingston and Malakai Black both missed the big event convention in New York this morning. And the announcement was made for each of them that they would not be appearing due to injuries that they suffered last night during the pay-per-view. So I don't know if that is maybe just a cover reason for why they're not there. It could just be that they're banged up. Doesn't mean that there's any kind of serious injury. I didn't hear of any serious injury reports coming out of the show last night. Hopefully both guys are okay. If they are banged up, hopefully they don't miss any kind of significant time. But that was the latest update I saw from PW Insider here before I got on the horn here and started recording. Now, we had a big talent announcement last night at Full Gear, which is that Jay Lethal is All Elite, and Jay Lethal becomes the first Ring of Honor defection to AEW since the announcement was made that the company would be shutting down for a few months, possibly forever. After its final battle pay-per-view next month, he will not be at that final battle pay-per-view. Per PW Insider, Lethal asked for and received his release several days ago. Otherwise, his deal would not have expired until the end of the year. And so that is a nice pickup for AEW. You know, he had the best run of his career, at least from a notoriety standpoint, well over a decade ago. He spent a number of years working for TNA. X Division stuff. Of course, a lot of people remember the Black Machismo gimmick. They remember him imitating Ric Flair, and he does a bang-on Flair impersonation. One of the more memorable segments in TNA history was the promo battle, the face-off between Flair and Jay Lethal. One of the more entertaining segments that they've ever done. They had like their own little woo-off. That was a long time ago, but he was over. Lethal was over. He had a lot of fans. He was one of the kind of the shining young stars in that company. And then one day, it was over. He got cut. To this day, he's never gotten a straight answer as to why he got cut or who made the ultimate. I mean, Dixie Carter made the ultimate decision because she was the boss. But the belief is there was always somebody there who was not really a fan of his, who had it in for him. And he fell out of favor, I guess, with the wrong person or the wrong people behind the scenes in that company. And so that was a shocking release at the time. And I remember interviewing him not long after he returned to Ring of Honor, after he had already left TNA, and asking him about that. I did a whole interview with him back on Sound Off 187 many, many years ago. But he never went to WWE. He got cut. He ended up back in Ring of Honor. And Ring of Honor has been his home now for the last decade since leaving Impact. And he has had great success. He has been a world champion. He has had great matches. in his time in ROH. He has tried to help build that company kind of back up. And the thing is, Ring of Honor is very much under the radar. It always has been, but especially in more recent years. And AEW did not do them any favors, because when AEW sprung up out of nowhere, I mean, they sucked up all the oxygen in the room and a lot of the new talent as well. Where do they end up? If they don't end up in WWE or WWE developmental, they end up in AEW. There are exceptions. But Ring of Honor has never been able to kind of just get over the hump to that next level. And Jay Lethal spending so many years of his career, prime years of his career, in Ring of Honor, is not the level of star that he should be. He should be a lot bigger than he is. And I don't know if it's too late for him or not. I don't think it is. Even though he's been doing this for 20 years already. He's not an old man. I think he's a great pickup for AEW. I mean, just the people that you could put him in the ring with and match him up with on this show is limitless. You know, I look forward to the day that we get Jay Lethal against Bryan Danielson. And Jay Lethal against any number of people on that roster. We've seen what he can do. You know, he could be very entertaining. So it's not just, oh, he's a great wrestler, but, you know, there's not much more to him than that. We know what he can do as far as the entertainment side of things. And what he did here on the show is he challenged Sammy Guevara to a TNT title match this Wednesday on Dynamite, which Sammy came out and promptly accepted. That is not the only match that they announced for Dynamite this Wednesday. We're going to get The Butcher and The Blade against Orange Cassidy and his new Chaos buddy from New Japan Pro Wrestling, making his AEW debut, the Stone Pitbull, Tomohiro Ishii. Ishii came over to the States with Okada, that big Battle in the Valley show. Ishii's sticking around. He's going to be appearing on TV this week. Ishii is also the new never open weight champion. He defeated Jay White in the main event of last night's Battle in the Valley, which I heard was excellent. That begins his sixth run with that title. I think the man deserved to have a run with the heavyweight title at least once. Never happened. Also on that show, Jonah Rock, the former Bronson Reed of NXT, made his New Japan debut. He walked to the ring after Moose's win over Juice Robinson. He stared down Moose before landing a senton on Robinson and doing the same to David Finlay when he tried to come out and help his partner. It looks like he's just going by the name Jonah going forward. I was happy to hear that he landed in New Japan. I think New Japan is a great fit for him. And I think we might see him pop up in Impact as well. Especially after that stare down with Moose. Okada defeated Buddy Matthews, who made his New Japan debut. That was said to be a really good match. When the match was over, Will Ospreay came out, 24 hours removed from his win over the Amazing Red at House of Glory. He went coast to coast from New York, flying out west to be there for this show. And basically what they did was they set up the main events for Wrestle Kingdom, because whoever wins the IWGP title match on night one, January 4th, between Okada and Shingo, is going to defend that championship against Ospreay on night two at the Tokyo Dome, January 5th. You remember Ospreay was forced to surrender the title in May after just 46 days due to a neck injury. He never actually lost the title. He still walks around with that new IWGP heavyweight title, the same one that Shingo has. Okada is walking around with the old IWGP heavyweight title. And I look at these two side by side holding their respective belts and I say, boy, you know, if you give me the choice of which championship I want to fight for, it's the one that Okada's holding. It just fits him so well. The way that you used to look at the Big Eagle belt, or not the Big Eagle, but the Winged Eagle, the smaller one, on Hogan or Bret Hart. You know, when you think, you associate certain championships with certain people. That belt, I associate with Okada. And I hope that if he ends up coming out of Wrestle Kingdom as the champion, that he just starts using that belt again as the IWGP title. But they have their main events all set now for Wrestle Kingdom coming up at the beginning of January. To go back to AEW, though, for a second, I've got a few notes I want to run through from Tony Khan's media call on Thursday, which made some headlines. He did confirm that Double or Nothing is headed back to Las Vegas in 2022. Of course, they were not there this year or last year due to COVID. The whole concept of the show is really to be based in Vegas. I was at the first Double or Nothing in Vegas 2 years ago. I had a blast. So very cool to hear that they're heading back to Vegas next year. He was asked about Ring of Honor and possibly bringing in members of the ROH roster. His answer was, keep an eye out because you never know who might show up. Well, we got our answer last night with Jay Lethal. But who else might show up from Ring of Honor? Well, what about the Briscoes? Jay and Mark coming in to be part of that tag team division. I think that would be the next nice pickup I'd like to see AEW make from Ring of Honor. Just to strengthen their already strong tag team division, bring in the Briscoes. Tony Khan confirmed Andrew Zarian's report from a few weeks ago about hosting their first Battle of the Belts event next year, although he did not say when. Zarian had said that it would be their first quarterly TNT special, which is set for January 8th, so it's a pretty safe bet that's probably when we're going to see that. And Khan was asked by Ella J of SEScoops.com about doing an all-women's show. And as she was asking this question, he cut her off mid-sentence, which she says he later apologized privately for. He did not come off great in this exchange, and I can understand why he would apologize, and good on him for apologizing. He cut her off to point out that the highest paid talent that worked the NWA Empower pay-per-view back in August were AEW talents that he sent that were paid by him, separate and apart from what they make in AEW. And he feels that he has done his part this year to contribute to women's wrestling, and he wished that the NWA had made that more clear and given him more credit for doing so. And the quote that he used, he said, it's kind of like when you pay for a dinner and nobody thanks you. Tony Khan looking for a pat on the back. And looks like a little heat there with Billy Corgan, it sounds like. He also pointed out how they've added Ruby Soho and Thunder Rosa to their roster and they're doing the TBS title tournament. So they're making great strides at improving women's wrestling. Everything he said there about the NWA stuff may well be true. And if they had an understanding and he feels that the NWA didn't live up to that understanding, then of course he has a right to feel frustrated about that. But this just came off very, very poorly. That being said, AEW hosted a Women's Tag Team Cup. Now it was relegated to YouTube, but they did host a Women's Tag Team Cup a couple of years ago. Now they're hosting this TBS tournament. They're introducing a new women's championship. They're signing new talent. It's not as if they're not doing anything with the ladies. Could they have an extra women's match on their shows each week instead of usually just keeping it to one? Sure. But their women's division is still a work in progress. It is not strong enough yet for an all-women show. There aren't enough characters that have been built up enough yet. Britt Baker has Thunder Rosa. They're pushing Jade Cargill. They have Ruby Soho now. They have Serena Deeb back from injury. Chris Statlander is with the Best Friends. They have a core there, but to do an entire show, and I don't know if she was referring to a weekly show or if she was talking about a big, like a pay-per-view like what the NWA did or Impact did with their Knockouts Knockdown. But if she's talking about an actual show, they've got to build up more names. And I think in time they will, but I don't think they're ready for that just yet. Other news and notes. Keith Lee celebrated his 37th birthday on Monday, and he tweeted out the following. Greetings and salutations. I could hear his voice in my head saying that as I read that. Greetings and salutations. This day is my birthday. It is not a happy birthday, but it is one that I am most grateful for. Several months ago, it was not a guarantee that I would make it to this day, so there is positivity in that. I paid all my medical bills from the many offices and machines that I frequented. There is positivity in that. And I do find it amusing that people believe anyone but me paid for my medical expenses. I was going to wait a couple of weeks, but I think it's time to look toward the future. Forward march, as I like to say. I am capable of so much more and I cannot wait to see what it looks like properly. I have a wide array of interests and abilities. I also consider myself to be rather open-minded. Here is to a future that, for all intents and purposes, seems limitless. Well, WWE was not amused by the implication that they failed to pay his medical expenses, and they put out the following statement. Keith Lee's recent comments implying WWE failed to pay his medical bills are erroneous. WWE has an extensive healthcare program for the medical care of its in-ring performers, and Mr. Lee was part of this program while with the company. Should Mr. Lee have any concerns over the payment of his medical bills, he is welcome to address them with WWE. It is rare for WWE to issue a statement rebutting somebody calling them out for being shitty to someone, which happens all the time. And until we have all the details, if we ever do, I'm withholding judgment on this. I like Keith Lee. And I do agree with one thing that he said there in that statement, which is that he is capable of so much more. Anybody who is a fan of his work, who has followed his work even before he came to WWE, or saw what he was capable of in NXT, knows that he is capable of doing so much more. So I agree with that. And I like Keith Lee, and I think WWE did him dirty, absolutely. But the one thing I have never liked are all of his nebulous tweets and just how vague they are. The vague tweets. If you've got something to say, just say it or shut up about it until such time that you can say something about it. If for whatever reason, legally you can't, then just pipe down. And when the time is right, speak your piece and tell your story, because all that does is get people speculating. And when they speculate, they get yelled at on social media by Mia Yim. He has done this a lot since the beginning of the year, and I'm sure he has been incredibly frustrated. A lot of the fans of his work are equally frustrated as this year has gone by, and a lot of it was because he was sick. But still, the ways that he's been used or not used, believe me, there's a lot of frustration to go around when it comes to Keith Lee and WWE. Now he's implying that WWE did not help pay his medical bills. I assume related to his battle with COVID. Now, if he comes out later and says, well, that's not what happened, people just assume. They took that little soundbite and they ran with it. Well, they assumed because you gave them a reason to assume. You know, WWE has done a lot of shitty things to a lot of people. It is easy to think that they did the same thing to Keith Lee. But if they insist that that is not the case, then maybe there's more to this than meets the eye. Maybe they think he got COVID outside the workplace and therefore they shouldn't be responsible for an injury or an illness that was suffered outside the ring. We don't know. We don't know. We don't know when he got COVID, from who he got COVID from, if that has anything to do with what he's referring to. We don't know. But if he wants to talk about it, it sure would be nice if he would just come out and say it before people start piling on WWE for something they may or may not have done. There's a lot of reasons to pile on WWE. But in this case, we don't know what the facts are when it comes to what he's talking about. Because the one thing that WWE typically are very good about is taking care of talent that get hurt in the ring. COVID, though, is a whole different ball of wax. And it almost cost this guy his life. But if he's got something to say, I wish he would just come out and say it. The website Metro UK broke the story that Wyndham Rotunda, the former Bray Wyatt, is about to begin filming on a new horror film. Colossum Studios owner and special makeup effects artist Jason Baker tells the website he is a phenomenal collaborator. He has become a really good friend, and we are actually, you're the first person that we're publicly telling this, we're starting a film at the end of the month. And the two of them apparently grew very close through his time, I guess Baker's time, working with WWE on the Firefly Funhouse stuff. He said, 2 weeks ago, we are filming in Tennessee. It is a feature film. It's something really new and different. I would say probably the best way to describe it is Itchy the Killer meets Xanadu. I don't know who Itchy the Killer is, but I've heard of Xanadu. This is all over my head. But it sounds interesting. They're not using any of the Fiend stuff. He says this is going to be something completely different, which I think legally I would imagine it would have to be different, even if they wanted to use the Fiend character or the puppets, you know, from the Firefly Funhouse. This sounds very cool. He is perfect for this sort of thing. I can't wait to see it. You know, I'm a horror movie buff, and I said I can never understand why he was never at least considered for some sort of horror role for WWE films while he was working for the company. It just seemed like it would have been the perfect fit. Meanwhile, Tony Khan has said that he has not had any recent discussions with Wyndham about coming to AEW. But that does not mean that it won't happen after he is done filming. ECW legend Sabu announced his retirement from wrestling on the Wrestling Shoot Interviews podcast this week. Says, I'm not doing real good. I hurt my back about a year ago and it's still been hurting. I wrestled a couple of weeks ago, but I shouldn't have. I've only wrestled like twice in the last year and I only went to the gym a couple of times in the last year because I hurt my back. I'm probably not gonna wrestle no more. I'm probably just going to do autograph signings and personal appearance type stuff. The key word there is probably. How many wrestlers have said, I will probably retire. I will probably never wrestle again. I would bet anything that this man has not wrestled his last match. In fact, when he was asked if there was one opponent who could get him back into the ring, he picked one. He picked Brock Lesnar. There's a better chance of me getting into the ring with Brock Lesnar than Sabu at this point. But he said, I would definitely get back in the ring for Brock Lesnar. I would love to wrestle him, especially if it was my final match. I would love to wrestle him. He's the best. He's a shooter. He's a good worker. He's my kind of opponent. I like big guys. I like wrestling big guys. I don't like wrestling guys like me because it's not that interesting. It's more interesting wrestling a guy like me against a guy like Brock Lesnar. He makes a great point. You know, some of Brock's best matches have been against guys smaller than him, right? Look at the matches with AJ Styles and Daniel Bryan and CM Punk and Seth Rollins. But Brock Lesnar against a broken down 56-year-old Sabu, I'm going to take a hard pass on that. But guaranteed, we have not seen the last of Sabu in a wrestling ring. The future of WWE's Up Up Down Down gaming channel is in limbo at the moment. Many of the content creators who appear on the channel on a regular basis, including our resident King of the Ring, Xavier Woods, are said to be holding out until Woods gets a bigger slice of the pie that WWE makes from the channel. This according to a report from Fightful.com. There has been a noticeable lack of new content over the last 3 weeks or so, outside of some smaller clips. And now we know why. Sean Ross Sapp says that he was told that Woods, who never actually owned the channel, WWE owns it, but he has been the face of the channel since the very beginning. He really is the driving force behind it. Nobody would even fucking know about Up Up Down Down were it not for Xavier Woods. And him bringing all of his friends in for all the gaming stuff, all the new content that you see, he really spearheads all of it. And Sapp is told that Woods makes little to nothing from Up Up Down Down, which has over 2.2 million subscribers on YouTube. He says Woods' income from both the channel and from his upcoming hosting gig on the G4 network both count against his WWE contract's downside guarantee. And Woods is said to be one of the holdouts. It's not just his friends sticking up for him. He is said to be one of the holdouts as well. What Xavier Woods makes or doesn't make isn't really of any concern to me. I mean, that's his business. It's his contract. But I'm a believer in always asking for what you think you're worth. For a long time, I never did that. I wish I could go back and take my own advice. Always ask for what you're worth. This Up, Up, Down, Down stuff is in addition to his work on TV, so the man should be appropriately compensated for that time and that effort that he puts into that channel, especially if that channel is a real moneymaker for that company. Now imagine if you had multiple talents like this banding together on the Twitch stuff from all those months ago when that whole fiasco blew up. Maybe if more people held out like they're holding out here for this Xavier Woods thing, If they actually had some big names who could join in and hold out, maybe they could have made a real difference. We'll never know. Speaking of King Woods, he tweeted out a video this week talking about the Survivor Series 5-on-5 Raw versus SmackDown match. And he asked the question, what are we fighting for? Which is a question I ask on this podcast every year when we talk about Survivor Series. What are we fighting for? What exactly is on the line outside of bragging rights in this match? Bragging rights for a brand that in a lot of cases, many of these people were not even on a few weeks ago. I've given suggestions on what could be up for grabs in these matches, and our good king has chimed in as well. He proposed that the losing team should have a five-way elimination match to determine the first five spots, the order of the first five spots in the Men's Royal Rumble match next year. Meanwhile, the winning team would do the same, but they would be fighting for spots 26 through 30 in the Rumble. Now, I like the fact that he is at least coming up with ways to make these matches mean something. That's more than I can say for the company he works for. If WWE, though, wants to have a surprise entrant, and many times they do, in the Royal Rumble, and they want that surprise entrant to enter at number 30, like John Cena back in 2008, when he came out, big surprise, Madison Square Garden, the place went nuts. If they ever wanted to do something like that, they're going to have that person come out at number 30, regardless of what, you know, rules they set up with Survivor Series and all that. So if there's ever a situation like that, they're going to have that person come out at number 30, regardless of who they are. So that could be a pain in the ass if you've already committed to giving the spot to a specific brand. And that person who you want in that spot does not belong to that brand. Maybe they're not even full-time on the main roster. That could be a problem. It's the same thing with winning, you know, the winning brand getting the main event of WrestleMania. That's a suggestion that has been made by some people before as well. Well, now WrestleMania is two nights every year. So which night do they get? You know, it doesn't really work. Plus, if The Rock comes back one year and he wants to wrestle Roman Reigns, but Monday Night Raw won at Survivor Series, it's not as if Raw is going to get that main event spot over The Rock. I mean, let's be honest here. One idea that I've pitched before is awarding the winning brand one draft pick, or even two draft picks, one male and one female, of their choosing from the opposing brand. Any star they wish from the losing brand, not including their champions. The champions are draft protected. Anybody else, though, they can pluck from the other show. So if Team Raw wins and they want to draft Roman Reigns from SmackDown, well, they can't do that. But if they want to draft Drew McIntyre and bring him back to Monday Night Raw, then they could take him. Or they could take Sasha Banks. At least then the stakes are high. There are actual stakes on the line. If these people have such brand loyalty and they want to make their brand as strong as possible and the level of competition as strong as possible, then they should be eager to win and bring some of that talent over to their show. At least there's something on the line. But I could see that me and a lot of you and Xavier Woods are putting far more thought into this than WWE ever has. And Ric Flair has resurfaced for the first time since the Plane Ride from Hell episode of Dark Side of the Ring turned him into a pariah, turned him into persona non grata for a while. WWE took him out of the signature of their shows. AEW never brought him in when I'm positive Tony Khan would have brought Ric Flair in. Probably for that Arthur Ashe Stadium show. I believe were it not for that whole controversy, he would be Andrade's manager right now on TV. It wouldn't be Arn Anderson, you know, punching Jose in the face at Full Gear last night. We would have had a standoff between Ric Flair and Arn Anderson. I fully believe that 100%. But he is coming back with a brand new podcast called Ric Flair Woo Nation Uncensored, co-hosted by Flair and former WCW announcer and radio jock Mark Madden. There's a name that I haven't really thought about in a very long time. Mark Madden still around. It's being produced by a new podcast network called Podcast Heat. The first episode drops this Wednesday. We should all take bets on whether it survives longer than his last podcast did, which lasted a little under 50 episodes before Flair pulled the plug. There was an incident at an airport in Boston a few years ago. I think he was drunk at the airport. And that was the end of the podcast. That was his choice. He pulled the plug. I never got the sense Flair even wanted to do a podcast. You know, for him, it's just, you know, if it pays me, I'll do it. Shockingly, he is not doing this new podcast with his son-in-law. He is not doing the podcast with Conrad as he did his first show. Conrad did the first show with Flair. Maybe Conrad said, look, I'm not getting involved in this again. He was smart enough to look at this and go, leave me out of it. I got enough on my plate as it is with Kurt Angle and Jeff Jarrett and Bruce Pritchard and Eric Bischoff and the other five or six podcasts that he's doing. He's like, I want no part of this. This ain't going to end well. This week's podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp Online Therapy. Check them out at betterhelp.com/solomonster. The best way to think about therapy is like this. You know, we get our cars tuned up to prevent bigger issues down the road. Pun very much intended, by the way. We get checkups every year at the doctor and go to the gym to stay, you know, physically fit so we don't get sick. We do the dishes every night so they don't pile up in the sink and leave a mess for the next day. Therapy is no different. It's routine maintenance for your mental and emotional wellness to stop smaller issues from becoming bigger ones later on. You don't want them to fester. Talking to a therapist does not mean something is wrong with you. It means that you're investing in yourself to keep your mind healthy. And there's absolutely no shame in asking for help. One of the big messages that I took away from that Eddie Kingston story that he posted online last week that everybody was talking about, and if you haven't read it, you need to go find it. It's a great piece. He gets into a lot of, you know, discussion about mental health and the issues that he has had and still battles on a daily basis. There's no shame in asking for help. BetterHelp is customized online therapy that offers video, phone, and even live chat sessions with your therapist. So you don't have to see anybody on camera if you don't want to. It's much more affordable than in-person therapy, and you can start communicating with your therapist in under 48 hours, all without ever having to leave the privacy and comfort of your own home. When you go to the website, you'll answer a series of questions to help match you with the right therapist for your needs, specializing in anxiety, depression, grief, self-esteem issues, and everything in between. Why invest in everything else and not your mind? This podcast is sponsored by BetterHelp, and Solomonster Sounds Off listeners get 10% off their first month at betterhelp.com/solomonster. That's BetterHelp.com/solomonster. Monday Night Raw this week averaged only 1.5 million viewers up against the NFL, with a third hour ratings collapse to 1.3 million, which tied for the lowest hour of Raw in the show's history. What do I always say? Every year. Well, it's the NFL. Well, that's true. The NFL is around every single year, and the lows just keep getting lower. And that third hour included the one match they actually advertised in advance between Seth Rollins and Kevin Owens, a 24-minute main event that ended in a count out. The story throughout the episode of Monday Night Raw this week was Kevin Owens trying to convince Big E and anybody who would listen, anybody he would run into in the back who would listen, that he really did not know about Seth Rollins striking Big E last week during Big E's match with Owens. He didn't see it. He didn't try to take advantage of it, even though he clearly did. He wasn't that kind of person anymore. Big E didn't believe him. He walked off. Rey Mysterio didn't seem all too interested in hearing about Owens' problems. Neither did R-Truth. We got a lot of long matches on this show, including an 8-man tag that went 22 minutes with Randy Orton, Matt Riddle, and the Street Profits against Dolph Ziggler, Big Bob, AJ Styles, who was back from his brief absence, and Omos. This was the definition of time filler, with a finish that came out of nowhere, was really not any good. Omos gave Riddle a tree slam. This after Riddle had tagged himself in against Orton's wishes to go after the big man. Randy Orton had told Riddle before the match to stop picking fights with giants like Omos. Riddle went after him anyway, so there's a story brewing there. But Omos gives Riddle a tree slam, and Riddle proceeded to lay there for far too long. While Orton got into the ring and was attacked by Rude and Ziggler, Rude then shoved AJ, his partner, which led to Omos, his other partner, throwing Rude into the barricade. All of these other things are happening. A lot of time has gone by. And then Ziggler just crawls into the ring, covers Riddle, who's been laying there the entire time, and pins him. 1, 2, 3. Riddle was down longer than Booker T was after he took that one pedigree at WrestleMania 19. And then when it was over, Orton hit Ziggler with an RKO and left him laying. So even when Dolph Ziggler wins, he still loses. The story of his career. This match went far too long. Just to further the story between Orton and Riddle, this did not need to be 22 minutes to get to a Dolph Ziggler win. We had Adam Pearce calling Rey Mysterio and Dominik to the ring to deliver the bad news that after looking at the Survivor Series teams, which were randomly announced on Twitter, he was filled with regret once he realized that all of the members of Team Raw were former WWE champions, all except for Dominik. And in his own words, he wants Team Raw to win. Now let's stop here for a second. Adam Pearce says he wants Team Raw to get the win at Survivor Series. Why? Why does Adam Pearce care whether or not Raw wins at Survivor Series? He's not the general manager of Raw. He's basically the general manager of both shows. Or the co-general manager, I guess, with Sonya Deville, of both shows. So why would he give a shit whether or not Raw wins? Unless they're setting up some sort of contrived story for the pay-per-view where Pierce wants Raw to win and Deville wants SmackDown to win, and even then it still doesn't make any sense. And it'll all be forgotten about the day after the pay-per-view anyway. But he said Dominik can remain on the team, provided he could beat this former WWE champion, which brought out Bobby Lashley. And MVP was back with him as well. No Hurt Business. Shelton Benjamin and Cedric Alexander were too busy chasing after the 24/7 joke belt later in the show. So much for that big Hurt Business reunion that I was getting excited for. So much for that. Way to kill that off. Lashley annihilated the kid, as he should have. He submitted him with the Hurt Lock, took his spot on Team Raw, which was the right move. Finally, we got an actual Monday Night Raw talent on Team Raw, and not another SmackDown guy. But why was Lashley not announced for the match to begin with? I mean, there's almost no effort paid to these types of things on this show. I did have a nice little laugh, though, at Jimmy Smith calling Dominik Mysterio Dominik Cruz by accident before the match. Once an MMA announcer, I guess always an MMA announcer. I'd rather see Dominik Cruz against Bobby Lashley than Dominik Mysterio. We got a non-title match between Big E and Chad Gable that included a chaos theory by Gable to Big E, with a great-looking delayed German suplex, which is impressive because Big E is no small man. But sadly, the crowd did not give a shit. No reaction for anything Gable did. These people know exactly where this guy is slotted. These people have already been conditioned to know that this man doesn't matter. They have made up their mind on Chad Gable. It's very sad. Very sad. What a waste. In the back, Sonya congratulated Carmella, Queen Zelina, Rhea Ripley, Liv Morgan, and Bianca Belair on Twitter, naming them to Team Raw at Survivor Series. She wanted to see some healthy competition, so those same five ladies would wrestle in a fatal five-way tonight, with the winner receiving a shot at the Raw Women's Championship. Doudrop piped up, because she was in this backstage meeting as well, and she asked a perfectly logical question about why she was overlooked for a spot on Team Raw when Bianca already lost to Becky Lynch. And Dana Brooke also felt like she was being overlooked, and Nikki Ash reminded all of them that unlike you, I'm actually a former Raw Women's Champion. Vega said that Nikki has had quite the fall from grace. She said this to one half of the Women's Tag Team Champions. A fall from grace indeed. It's nice that somebody agrees. Burying their own belts here on their own show. The fatal five-way went 16 minutes, which was a nice change from the usual length of these women's matches on this show. It was pretty good overall. I mean, even better that Liv Morgan went over in the end. Liv Morgan is now the number one contender, and she got right up in Becky's face on top of the announce desk when it was over. Liv Morgan has a lot of fans out there, and she is someone who has not been given a chance yet to challenge for the main title. I don't think she has a very good chance of taking it, but I think she has no chance, but I was happy to see them go with somebody different for a change and set up a new opponent for Becky in the process. If they would have gone right back to Bianca after so many failed attempts, you know, to take back the belt, it would have backfired. It would have backfired and it would have started to turn the crowd against her. So they had to move on to somebody else. The 24/7 nonsense on this show, you know, I got messages from so many people saying, oh, I hope you talk about this segment. I want to hear you talk about this segment and rip it to shreds. The 24/7 nonsense on this show taught us this week that the single most dangerous maneuver in all of WWE isn't the RKO, it isn't the Hurt Lock, it isn't the Curb Stomp, it is the roll-up, because nobody is able to kick out of it. Drake Maverick beat Reggie to win the 24/7 title, which led to five more title changes, one right after the other. Tozawa rolled up and pinned Maverick. Then Corey Graves got up from the announce desk and he rolled up Tozawa to win his first championship since winning the NXT tag team titles with Pac 8 years ago. Graves was then rolled up and pinned by Byron Saxton, or Brian Saxton according to WWE's Twitter account. Don't tell Chris Jericho that they misspelled the guy's name. Brian was then rolled up and pinned by Maverick, who got back in the ring and was pinned by Reggie, who ran off with the belt. The only positive thing I can say about any of this is that at least it came during the lowest rated hour in Raw history. The less eyeballs on this shit, the better. We got a This Week in History video covering the Montreal Screwjob. I was just wondering if someone was going to bring that up. I don't think I've heard enough about this incident. I mean, it's like nobody ever talks about it. I wish more people would talk about it. I'm sure they will next year, because next year is 25 years since the 1997 Survivor Series. So get ready. They left out the best part, though, with Bret Hart punching Vince McMahon in the face. I don't know why they left that part out. We had a main event of Seth Rollins one-on-one with Kevin Owens. This was a rematch from WrestleMania 36. They had a very long match, the kind that you would expect from a WrestleMania match, with some good action, but a finish that, you know, while it may have made sense to further the storyline and cause Kevin Owens to snap, when you do a count-out finish like this after a 25-minute match, it's completely deflating. Owens and Rollins, they found themselves outside the ring and over by where Big E was sitting doing guest commentary. Rollins made it back into the ring in time, but as Owens went to dart back into the ring, Big E was standing in his way. He had his back turned, so he had no idea that he was blocking the way. And Owens was counted out, and this sent him over the edge. So he attacked Big E, he threw him into the ring steps a couple of times, gave him a pop-up powerbomb on the ring apron. He yelled, he screamed. Owens let all of his frustrations out that have been building all night long because he couldn't get anybody to believe him when he said that he didn't mean to do to Big E what he did to him last week. I don't know that this was a heel turn. People were like, oh, it's the Kevin Owens heel turn. I don't know that this was a heel turn so much as it was just a way to set up, I think, a triple threat match that we're going to be getting after Survivor Series with Rollins, Owens, and Big E, given that all three men have issues with one another. But a heel turn is what Kevin Owens desperately needs right now. I'm just not convinced this was it. It was a dreadful ending to an otherwise good match, but an overall painful episode of Raw to sit through. I really think the government could get a lot of useful information from terrorists and terror suspects, foreign and domestic, if they sat them in a room and forced them to watch Monday Night Raw. They would crack before they even got to hour three. They'd spill their guts. Anything to make it stop. SmackDown saw some changes made to the Survivor Series. Sasha Banks, the leader of Team SmackDown, tagged with Naomi and Aaliyah for a win over Shayna Baszler, Natalya, and Shotzi Blackheart. Aaliyah looked nervous, you know, which is understandable, but she shook off the nerves okay. Not bad for her first match on the main roster. Natalya had her in the sharpshooter and grabbed the rope for leverage, but Naomi reached up and draped her neck first over the middle rope. That allowed Aaliyah to roll her backwards and just sort of lean on her for the win. I can't even really call this much of a roll-up, but the fans popped for the shock finish, and Aaliyah celebrated like she had just won the main event of WrestleMania. In the back, she was all smiles being interviewed about her win when Sonya Deville, doing her new Debbie Downer gimmick, informed Aaliyah that she was no longer on Team SmackDown at Survivor Series. And then she acted all sad as the camera lingered on her for far too long. So Aaliyah is out of Survivor Series. She never should have been in Survivor Series to begin with. Now she's out. Sonya could always add herself, or Naomi could earn her way in. That seems unlikely given her storyline right now with Sonya Deville. I'd like to see Toni Storm take that spot. And speaking of Toni Storm, she made a rare appearance on this show. Her whole career since being called up in July has been one rare appearance. She interrupted a very annoying Charlotte Flair promo where she got the crowd to chant, "Becky, uh-oh." That's the new thing they're trying to get over now. They want the crowd to chant, "Uh-oh." That's the new thing they're trying to get over. This was dreadful. Until Toni came out and pointed out that Becky defended her Raw Women's title on TV recently, so how about it? How about Charlotte, you defend your title against me tonight? And Flair rejected her idea and walked out. They need to start being consistent with Toni Storm's appearances. You know, Sasha Banks has a feud going on right now with Shotzi. Sasha against Toni Storm is a destination they need to eventually get to. But there's no reason that she can't be on TV either every week or every other week, racking up wins in the meantime. It does her no good to show up on TV, win a match, and then not show up again for 6 weeks. Or even worse, show up and lose, like she did to Zelina Vega in The Queen's Crown, and then not show up again for 6 weeks. There was a website that had a report, I don't remember exactly where it originated from, but they were defending WWE and saying, oh, you know, Toni Storm is not forgotten about. Fans think that she's forgotten about, but no, it's just a matter of she's not on the Survivor Series card. So therefore, they're not focusing on her at the moment. It's not her time. It's not Toni time yet, because they're preparing for Survivor Series, which is a fucking laugh, because this is about as bad a promotion for a major pay-per-view as I have ever seen from this company. So if they're preparing for Survivor Series, they're doing a piss-poor job of it. But this idea that, oh, well, it's not her time because she's not on the next pay-per-view. It hasn't been Toni time since July, when she debuted. How many months ago was that? It wasn't her time in July, in August, in September, in October, and apparently not November either. Shall we try for January, perhaps? Why was she even called up in the first place? Don't give me this shit. Well, it's just not her time because she's not on this pay-per-view. 4 fucking months they could have been doing something with her. They chose not to. This has been a recurring problem since she first showed up on the main roster. Not because it's November and she's not on the November pay-per-view. Now on the Charlotte Becky stuff, Becky Lynch appeared on the Sports Illustrated media podcast and she addressed her real life heat with Charlotte Flair. This is what she said. I don't know, man. We don't talk anymore. We don't talk. So all I'll say is the locker room needs a hero sometimes. And sometimes somebody's got to be a hero. I'm all right being that hero. That's what I'll say on that matter. She was then asked by Jimmy Trina if having real life issues with someone makes things more difficult when they work together. And this was Becky's response. Oh, 100% more difficult. That's the thing. When you've got two people that are wanting to work together to make magic, then you make magic. Sometimes when there's hostility, when you can't trust that person, you never know what's going to happen. You always have to be on guard. It's like a game of chess. You have to be thinking 2 steps, 3 steps, 4 steps ahead. What are they going to do? How am I going to handle it? This business is built on trust. It's built on working together. That's the art of it. That's the beauty of it. If I make you look good, you make me look good. It's an art. It's a beautiful art. It's an art I love. Boy, she loves art. It's an art I love. Maybe she liked Art Donovan. King of the Ring is her favorite pay-per-view. It's an art I love more than anything. If people don't know how to make that art, then it becomes difficult. It becomes tricky. And you never really get the full potential. But there's intrigue there as well, because you never know, was that meant to happen? Was that not meant to happen? What's going to go down? There's interest in both ways. One way, it's the beautiful, pure art of pro wrestling. The other way, it's a bit of a shit show. So we'll see what happens. And when she was asked point blank if she trusted Charlotte, she said no. Now, I do believe the incident between them a few weeks ago backstage was legit, and I do believe they're not nearly as close in real life as they used to be. Charlotte admitted as much on Renee Young's podcast months ago, before any of this even went down. But this was clearly a response that was designed to build interest in their match at Survivor Series. I watched the interview. I didn't just listen to it. I watched it. I could see her on screen. This looked like someone playing up a real life situation to try to get some extra Peacock subs for the pay-per-view. And that's what you want to do when you're trying to build interest in a match that isn't all that interesting without it. What is the appeal in heel versus heel Becky Lynch against Charlotte Flair? If not for the draw of, will they shoot on each other? The answer is no, by the way, in case you were wondering, but it's all they have to go on. If you don't have that, you have a rehash of a feud from a few years ago. There's not a lot of real heat on this otherwise, because they decided to turn Becky. Charlotte's already a heel. There's nothing on the line. They're both champions, but obviously it's non-title. You have nothing, if not for the hook of, will they shoot on each other? That's all you have. So I believe that there is some maybe trust issues there, and they're not as friendly as they used to be, but they have to play it up, and that's all this was. It doesn't mean that the stories we heard a few weeks ago were not true. It doesn't mean that there aren't issues between the two of them. It just means that, wisely, they're playing the only card they really have to play at the moment. Los Lotharios got a win over the Intercontinental Champion Shinsuke Nakamura and Rick Boogs, with Nakamura eating the pin, which I did not like. Unless Garza is challenging Nakamura on TV this week for the championship, he and Kurio, they're doing the tag team thing, right? There was no reason for them to pin the champion when you've got Rick Boogs in the same match. At least follow this up with a title match for Garza. If Garza was not in a tag team, I might actually believe he had a shot at winning the title. But now, I mean, there's no way of that happening. I'm happy they won, but they pinned the wrong guy. Didn't like that. Did not like Nakamura being pinned. Adam Pearce was backstage, and standing next to him, without any context or explanation whatsoever, was Von Wagner from NXT. Oh, God. He's on NXT, now he's on SmackDown. Pierce was questioning Sonya Deville removing Aaliyah from the women's team. She said it made the team stronger. Sami Zayn appeared. He demanded that Adam Pierce remove Jeff Hardy from the men's team. Zayn was looking in a mirror earlier on, thought he was all by himself. He was giving this big speech, like a pep talk, and then they pulled the camera back to reveal that Jeff Hardy was standing there listening to him the entire time, and he asked Jeff for his opinion on what he said, and Jeff said, honestly, I thought it sucked. So that was enough for Sammy to go to Adam Pearce and try to get him booted from the Survivor Series team. And Pearce said that he would face Jeff Hardy instead in a match, and the loser would be removed from the team. Now, that would appear to indicate a very good chance that Von Wagner would take the loser's spot on the team at Survivor Series, because he's big and tall. Pat McAfee was in awe of the man's size, had no idea who he was. Who is that guy? That's what Pat McAfee said. Who is that man? The man has been all over NXT now for weeks, which airs, by the way, on the USA Network, the same network that airs Monday Night Raw. You want to have your developmental show on television? You can't play dumb and act like you don't know who these people are. You cannot do that. You can't have it both ways. NXT airs on USA Network. You cannot pretend to not know who the fucking guy is. What a burial of NXT. The one good thing about Von Wagner showing up here, they might think that Kyle O'Reilly really is on his way out, so they're already preparing Wagner for a future without his little buddy. That's about the only good thing that could come out of this. Jeff Hardy beat Sami Zayn in their match, so Sami is off Team SmackDown, 1 week out now. 1 week out we are from the pay-per-view. We have two openings, one for the men and one for the women. I already said I would slot Tony Storm into the women's match. On the men's side, Sheamus is back on TV this week. Hopefully Von Wagner was there as a red herring. I think Sheamus gets the spot, if I had to venture a guess about who's going to fill out Team SmackDown. Hit Row is in the back, cutting a promo and talking about their sneakers. The act just isn't the same without B-Fab. It's just not. Then they cut to Jinder Mahal and Shanky, who mocked them and did a horrible rap. And they danced, and Jinder called him Slim Shanky and Ice Ice Shanky. I hope whoever wrote this shit gets shanked. And in the main event, Xavier Woods beat Roman Reigns in a match where if Woods won, Roman would have to bend the knee. And if he didn't, if he refused, he would be stripped of his Universal title and banished from SmackDown. And that wasn't something Adam Pearce or Sonya Deville came up with. That was something Paul Heyman came up with. So they were very confident that Roman was going to win this match. Woods won the match, but did so by disqualification after he hit his springboard elbow drop. Looked like he had Roman pinned. But the Usos pulled Woods out of the ring and assaulted him. Reigns did bend the knee in the middle of the ring, but it was to allow the Usos to then place Xavier's crown upon his head. So technically, I guess he adhered to the stipulation. He did bend the knee. I thought Reigns looked ridiculous with the crown on his head. He is not a comedy act. He is a serious star. There is a reason when Steve Austin won the crown in 1996, he never actually put the crown on his head. Remember, he walked up on stage to cut that Austin 316 promo, and there they have the robe and the crown. He never put any of it on because he would have looked ridiculous and it would have gone against everything they were doing with him that night. Roman should not be wearing this on his head either. There wasn't a single mention by Big E on Raw Monday of his match with Roman Reigns at Survivor Series, which is the main event of this show. The build to the match has been more subtle, with the Usos crippling Kofi Kingston last week, injuring his leg, and now this week stealing Xavier's crown. The Bloodline has taken out both of Big E's friends. He should be out for revenge on TV this week, but then again, I thought he'd be out for revenge on Bobby Lashley when Lashley took out the New Day over the summer, and that never happened either. But they have 6 days left, starting tomorrow, to put some real heat on this match, which has none right now. I cannot think of a Big Five pay-per-view, if you consider Survivor Series to still be part of the Big Five, that has had a weaker build than this one. Brock Lesnar is being advertised, by the way, for the December 10th SmackDown in Los Angeles, vowing to buy himself a ringside seat. Since he is suspended and all, that's how they're promoting this. We might get to see Brock Lesnar sitting ringside next to Brock Lesnar t-shirt guy. Roman Reigns is not currently advertised for that show. I would have to think that that's going to change between now and then. I don't know why Roman would not be on that show, especially in the LA market, but right now he is not advertised for that show. Let's get into some NXT 2.0 stuff here. Last week I said it looked like TakeOver was dead, and they were going to call their next live special something else. And this week we got confirmation. NXT TakeOver is no more. May it rest in peace. On December 5th, it will simply be NXT War Games. Not TakeOver War Games, just War Games. Good. TakeOver died when NXT died, and they reverted back to developmental. It should be called something else. I'm glad they ditched the name. It's the right call. On the show this week, Toxic Attraction's big push continues. They're really pushing the sex appeal of these three. One thing that needs to change, JC Jane. This is the third time now that I have seen this woman doing a move through the ropes and getting her feet caught. The first time it was on a suicide dive out to the floor, and it looked like she hurt herself, and then they took her out of the match. This time she tagged in, she did a fancy little roll through into the ring and into a neck breaker, but it looked bad because her feet touched the top rope as she rolled in, which slowed down her momentum. It's the developmental show, you try things, not everything is going to look great, I get that. If they don't work, you don't try them anymore. So she needs to work on that, or stop doing it. It was Io Shirai, Caden Carter, and Casey Catanzaro against Mandy Rose, Gigi Dolin, and JC Jane. Zoe Stark, we now know, tore her ACL and her meniscus, so she's going to be out for a long time, which leaves Io to return to the singles ranks. Dolin got the pin on Carter to win it for the heels. I like that Dolin got the win. I am very high on Gigi Dolin. Kaylee Ray, the longest reigning NXT UK Women's Champion, has come to 2.0, and she's probably thinking, what have I done? How do I go back to the UK show? She picked up a win over Saray, who is absolutely doomed. I mean, this woman, she's just done. She is done. She has no chance. You talk about bad timing. You know, she got signed and debuted on the old NXT, and then it converted over to 2.0, and she has barely been featured, yet to win a match. I don't have a good feeling about her future on that show. Ike Minjiro and Kushida are now going by the tag team name Jacket Time, which sounds like something half the audience probably does when they see Toxic Attraction on their TV screen. Jacket Time. People are paid to come up with these names. So we continue this review here on the Solomonster Strokes Off. They at least had a good match with the Creed brothers from Diamond Mine. The Creed brothers picked up the win. Odyssey Jones ran out upon the climax of this match to help clean up, or clean house, I should say. How long before they have these two coming to the ring to the Ghostbusters theme song is what I want to know. We hear Bustin' Makes Me Feel Good every single week, right? If they can get the rights from Ray Parker Jr., maybe that could be their new theme song. Raquel Gonzalez was here for a promo in the ring, and she came out with one thing on her mind. She asked Dakota Kai to get her ass out here, and Dakota walked out on stage. She had this creepy laugh going, and Dakota said it felt good hitting Raquel with the shovel when she cost her the women's championship. All of a sudden, Cora Jade attacked Dakota Kai from behind, and the referees ran out to pull both of them apart. Gonzalez walked over to Jade. After Dakota ran to the back, she said she understands that Cora wants Kai, but she wants her first. And Cora Jade went for a fist bump, but Raquel shoved it aside. I believe they're doing the match, actually. I think they've since announced on TV this Tuesday, I believe it's going to be Raquel Gonzalez one-on-one against Dakota Kai. I liked what they did on this show with Cameron Grimes. He got a squash win over Ru Feng. Duke Hudson, the poker prick, came down to the ring. He was still upset over Cameron Grimes showing him up in that game of poker the week before. He called Grimes a stupid little hick and a rotten little troll who lives under a bridge. And the crowd gave him the what treatment through all of this. Grimes then spoke, and he changed to more of a natural-sounding voice. He actually sounded like a human being. He got serious for a second. He goes, dude, what's with the name calling? Said, I've been called a hick before, but I hold it down in the ring and at the poker table and on Wall Street. He said he sometimes plays dumb, and last week he played Hudson, who challenged Grimes then to a poker showdown this Tuesday, which of course Grimes accepted. We never got the big makeover that we were hearing about for Cameron Grimes, which is good. The only difference I can see is that he shaved his chest. Otherwise, he looks exactly the same. Cameron Grimes, as is, can get over as a big main roster babyface, I still believe. And I liked him getting serious for a minute and talking about how he sometimes likes to play dumb, but he's no dummy. I liked that. This poker crap, not so much. But I did like what they did with Grimes on this show. Solo Sikoa won a triple threat match over LA Knight and Grayson Waller. They worked together, did Knight and Waller for a little bit. They tried to take out the Samoan, but the alliance was short-lived. Sokoa tossed Waller out of the ring with a belly-to-belly suplex. He finished off LA Knight with the Samoan splash. They're keeping him strong. They're giving him the monster push. You know, Bron Breakker and Solo Sokoa will make for a fun main event to a live special, I'd say, in about 6 months. Elektra Lopez did not have her best week in the ring. Really, she's been pretty rough around the edges since I saw her first match. That sit-out powerbomb finish that she beat Erica Jan with looked very scary. She's in the right place, you know, this being developmental and all. After the match, she called out Zion Quinn, who she's got a thing for. She called out Zion Quinn, not to sing more entrance songs, thankfully, but to offer him a spot in Legado del Fantasma. I don't know where Santos Escobar was, but Joaquin Wilde was there, and Raul Mendoza, and Elektra Lopez was leading the promo, and she was fawning all over this guy. He respectfully declined her invitation, and when Wilde and Mendoza went to attack him, he fought them off, and then he had a stare down with Lopez. In the back, Kyle O'Reilly was being interviewed and said that he wasn't sure if he should go after the NXT title as a single star or the NXT tag team titles with apparently Adam Pearce's new bodyguard, Von Wagner. I think Kyle should go after the AEW tag team titles with Bobby Fish. That's what I think he should do. Sadly, he chose the NXT tag team titles with Wagner, and Imperium then showed up and taunted him a little bit. Kyle is on the fast track to nowhere, the longer this drags on. Show ended with an old-school NXT-style main event between Pete Dunne and Carmelo Hayes, non-title. This was a very good match. Dexter Lumis was ringside late in the match. There was a hand, a gloved hand, that popped up from under the ring, up through the ring skirt, not through the actual ring. And that distracted Hayes, who walked right into the bitter end. Pete Dunne picks up the win. That should put him in line for a North American title match, even though Dunne should really be challenging Tommaso Ciampa for the NXT title. This is the first time since 2.0 launched that we got a match that reminded me of a main event that we would have seen on the show, you know, 3 months ago. So I enjoyed the main event, but the show is, I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's depressing. It's just depressing to see. They're trying different things and throwing shit at the wall to see what sticks. And some stuff will stick, a lot of it won't. I'll take my little victories where I can, like this main event here on this show. And there are, look, they got a lot of blue chip talents on this show. I look at Carmelo Hayes, the dude is a star. Bron Breakker is a star. Solo Sokoa could be a star. I mean, they have, the pieces are there. They have some of the pieces already there. But what this show has become is just very difficult to watch week to week. Let's do a few mailbag questions and then we'll get out of here. Again, a little shorter this week because I am exhausted. But if you have questions, you can email me, thesolomonster@gmail.com. Please include your name and where you are from when you write in. John from New Jersey, what do you think of a feud between Kevin Owens and Edge for the Royal Rumble? KO's contract is really over at the end of January. Let him go out in style at one of the biggest pay-per-views of the year. I'm down for an Edge-Kevin Owens feud in case Owens is going to be departing soon. It could be our only chance to get one. I'm sure the two of them would love to work together. Owens has had some great Royal Rumble matches before. He had that match with Dean Ambrose in 2016 for the Intercontinental title. I think that was Last Man Standing, if I remember. And he had a match with Roman Reigns for the Universal title as well. So I think Edge and Kevin Owens in a singles match, if that is possibly going to be his final pay-per-view. And if Owens maybe goes heel between now and then, it works even better. I think that would be great. Justin from New Jersey. We go from one J from Jersey to another J from Jersey. Do you think that maybe Vince McMahon has Alzheimer's disease? Wow. He says it would explain his strange behavior and decisions that he has made over the last year. On a lighter note, if Shawn Michaels had not injured his back at the 98 Royal Rumble, do you think that he still would have done the job for Austin at WrestleMania 14? First of all, I don't know what makes you think Vince McMahon has Alzheimer's disease as a way of explaining his erratic behavior. He's been this way for years. You make it sound like this has only been an issue over the last 12 months. This has been an issue for years. I don't know if he has Alzheimer's or not, but I would not use that as an excuse to explain away his behavior. It's just Vince McMahon being Vince McMahon. Shawn Michaels, if he hadn't gotten hurt at the 98 Rumble, still would have done the job for Steve Austin. Because it would have been the right thing to do. And whether it was Vince McMahon or whether it was The Undertaker taping up his fists, somebody would have put Shawn Michaels in his place if he wasn't willing to do the right thing that night. So yes, I think, and it would have been a much better match too, because I never really was a fan of that match. But I think he would have done the job and Austin would have been the champion all the same. And Trevor, from South London, England. I was watching a Brian and Vinny recap show talking about the Alliance era of WWF recently. In the comments, one person brought up an unpopular opinion that as amazing as Steve Austin was for wrestling, he never truly put someone over. You can talk about stars like Rock, Taker, Jericho, Foley, and even Triple H, who throughout their respective careers made at least one star. Is there any particular star that Austin truly put over in his career? Austin is a tricky one because he was so over. Just by working with him, he would give people the rub. And then when his star was starting to fade a little bit and his body was starting to break down, he retired. At 38 years old, he retired and he stepped away. And everybody you just mentioned is well into their 40s and 50s, and they're still, in most cases, they're still wrestling. Not all cases. Austin was done at 38. Obviously, he would have had a much longer career were it not for the neck injury. So he never got into that late part of his career where you would have expected him to be used in more of that kind of role, where he would be expected to put over the younger guys. Had he stuck around another 5 years, let's say, I believe he would have put more people over, whether he wanted to or not. His issue with Brock Lesnar was never about putting over the new guy. It was more about how fucking dumb it was to lose to him in an unannounced television match. It was a King of the Ring qualifying match. And Austin was right. It was stupid. It was very, very stupid. Now, that doesn't mean it was right for him to walk out on his employer and handle things the way that he did. But was he correct in saying that it was dumb creative that should have been changed? Absolutely. Now, he didn't put over Triple H at SummerSlam 99, but he did lose to him and put him over 2 months later at No Mercy. He and Rock both lost to Chris Jericho and put Jericho over as the undisputed champion of Vengeance that year. That Jericho won the WWF and WCW belts in 01. But, to go back to your original question, no, I can't think of one person that Steve Austin made on his own or really put over on his own. Rock was very giving when it came to jobs, so was Jericho, maybe more than they should have been sometimes. Maybe that's why Austin felt bigger, because he didn't lose very often, or if he did, it was usually him getting screwed over by Mr. McMahon. When Austin was at his peak, he lost some matches, like to Kane in the First Blood match, but that's different than what you're talking about. He didn't get Kane over. It wasn't even about Kane. It was about popping a TV rating the next night, which worked. Austin was so over back then. I mean, he shouldn't have been losing too much anyway. He's just one of those rare breeds. As hot as he was during that period, and it was a short period of time. We're really only talking about a couple of years, 3 years maybe. He should not have been losing very often. He should not have been used to get a bunch of other people over. He was just in this kind of rarefied atmosphere that not too many other people are in. You know, maybe one person you could have used him to do that for, but no, he never really did. Keep sending those questions on in, thesolemonster@gmail.com. I do read everything you guys send me. And we'll try to get to more of your questions next week. We're going to try to get to more of your email questions on Thursday as well. The plan right now is to go live on Thursday night, probably at 8 p.m. Eastern, for a 14-year anniversary special. And we might do some Survivor Series predictions on there as well. But a lot of it will just be hanging out, answering your questions, super chat and email. I'll try to pull some email questions. So this would be a good week to get some emails on into me. So that's the plan for Thursday. Of course, I'll be live Wednesday night after Dynamite, Friday night after Rampage. And next Sunday is the Survivor Series. And it's also episode 731 of the podcast. The grind continues. The work never ends. And I thank each and every one of you for Tuning in to all of the streams and all of the shows and downloading and sharing and liking and donating and all the different ways that people support our sponsors like BetterHelp this week. Got a lot of positive feedback, actually, from people who were not aware of BetterHelp the first time I promoted them. And a lot of people, I guess, have given it a shot. And if you've tried them out, let me know. You know, let me know. You don't have to give me the details, obviously, but let me know how your experience has been. Hopefully it has turned into something that is very helpful for a lot of people. So thank you again. I will see you guys next Sunday for episode 731. Until then, be well. Stay safe. Have yourselves a fantastic week. And we'll be back to do it all over again next weekend. And I'll see you on Thursday for the 14-year anniversary stream. Until then, take care, guys.
The Salamonster sounds off.
If you're a Kendo Stick fan, you are in luck. For all the themed and gimmick shows this company has, I'm surprised WWE hasn't given us Kendo Stick pay-per-view. All Kendo Sticks. Kendo Stick on a pole. You can hang the Kendo Sticks from the ceiling in a ladder match. You can put the Kendo Sticks at the end of the aisleway. You hide the Kendo Sticks strategically in different parts of the building. Oh, they can have a lot of fun with this. I just came up with that off the top of my head. WWE Kendo Stick. The most overused prop in all of wrestling.
The Salamonster Sounds Off, available wherever you hear podcasts, including iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and now Pandora.
Want more content?
Visit youtube.com/thesalamonster for Sound Off extras and more. And follow the Salamonster on Twitter @Salamonster.
Salamonster.
Salamonster.
Put that cigarette out.
Salamonster Sounds Off.